Hello, and welcome to ProU Podcast, episode number 281, Found Art. Found Art by TJD. And this just hit me. Was end of last year digging what was coming out of me artistically, like the output, like what was flowing out of the fountain whilst balancing. And then just like the things I was doing around my apartment, I'm like, why is this such an important part of my life? And I haven't really shared it, you know, in depth on the podcast. And I've shared everything else in my life. And I thought, well, it's that important to me. And I wanted to share it as kind of like I should share it because I've shared everything else. But I also wanted to just share my love and my passion about it and how it began, why it's so important to me now. And I think everyone should have that thing, you know, that they do that fulfills them outside of, oh, I got to do the job to make money or whatever. But it has just been the most wonderful thing I've pursued in my life. And it's been the last, 10, 12 years. So, you know, I wasn't doing a lot of this stuff up until, you know, before I was 40. I mean, I really wasn't doing anything, you know, with the wood and the frames and balancing the stones and now the driftwood. Now I look around the Zen garden and, you know, almost, you know, 90% of what's in the Zen garden I made. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool. And I'm like, well, here you go. So, might not be your cup of tea. And just remember, I'm not trying to hit it out of the park every Thursday. I'm just trying to tell you what I'm doing, tell you how I'm living, share my experience, because that's truly what I get to do. And you get to listen or not listen. That's your one true power in this here podcast world. But I do thank you for listening. I do appreciate you. If you have any comments, questions, would like to share anything with me, send it to proupodcast@gmail.com. Check out the ProU Podcast Facebook page. I'm doing the live workout Wednesday, every Wednesday, posting it. I did 18 of them in a row. So those are up there, all the quotes, everything I put out, I put up on the ProU Podcast Facebook page. So check that out. If you could swing by iTunes, search my name, Tom J. Dieters, or just Tom Dieters, the ProU Podcast will pop up and you can go ahead and throw a rating down or a comment. And I appreciate all those that have thus far. And if you do that for me, I appreciate it and I thank you in advance. And if there's any other things you'd like to share with me, any comments, questions at all, just let me know. Let me know. I'd love to hear from you. But again, what's most important to me is I get to share and I've got people that want to listen. So I'm really grateful for those of you that do listen. Enjoy. A Christmas Story. Pa never had much compassion for the lazy or those who squandered their means and then never had enough for the necessities. But for those who were genuinely in need, his heart was as big as all outdoors. It was from him that I learned the greatest joy in life comes from giving, not from receiving. It was Christmas Eve, 1881. I was 15 years old and feeling like the world had caved in on me because there was just hadn't been enough money to buy me the rifle that I'd wanted so bad that year for Christmas. We did the chores early that night for some reason. I just figured Pa wanted a little extra time so we could read in the Bible. So after supper was over, I took my boots off and stretched out in front of the fireplace and waited for Pa to get down the old Bible. I was still feeling sorry for myself, and to be honest, I wasn't in much of a mood to read scriptures. But Pa didn't get the Bible. Instead, he bundled up and went outside. I couldn't figure it out because we had already done all the chores. I didn't worry about it long, though. I was too busy wallowing in self-pity. Soon Pa came back in. It was a cold, clear night out, and there was ice in his beard. "Come on, Matt," he said. "Bundle up good. It's cold out tonight." I was really upset then. Not only wasn't I getting the rifle for Christmas, now Pa was dragging me out in the cold, and for no earthly reason that I could see. We'd already done all the chores, and I couldn't think for anything else that needed doing, especially not on a night like this. But I knew Pa was not very patient at one dragging one's feet when he told him to do something, so I got up and put on my boots and my cap, got my coat and my mittens. Ma gave me a mysterious smile as I opened the door to leave the house. Something was up, but I didn't know what. Outside, I became even more dismayed. There, in front of the house, was the work team, already hitched to the big sled. Whatever it was we were going to do wasn't going to be short. Whatever it was we were going to do wasn't going to be a short, quick little job. I could tell. We never hitched up the big sled unless we were going to haul a big load. Pa was already up on the seat, reins in hand. I reluctantly climbed up beside him. The cold was already biting at me. I wasn't happy. When I was on, Pa pulled the sled around the house and stopped in front of the woodshed. He got off and I followed. "I think we'll put the high sideboards," he said. "Here, help me." The high sideboards? It had been a bigger job than I wanted to do with just the low sideboards on it. But whatever it was we were going to do would be a lot bigger with the high sideboards on. When we had exchanged the sideboards, Pa went into the woodshed and came out with an armload of wood. The wood I spent all summer hauling down from the mountain and then all fall sawing into blocks and splitting. What was he doing? Finally, I said something. "Pa," I asked, "what are you doing?" "You been by the Widow Jensen's lately?" he asked. The Widow Jensen lived about 2 miles down the road. Her husband had died a year or so before and left her with 3 children, the oldest being 8. "Sure, I'd been by, but so what?" "Yeah. Why?" "I rode by just today," Pa said. "Little Jakey was out digging around in the wood pile trying to find a few chips. They're out of wood, Matt." That was all he said, and then he turned and went back into the woodshed for another armload of wood. I followed him. We loaded the sled so high that I began to wonder if the horses would be able to pull it. Finally, Pa called a halt to our loading. Then we went to the smokehouse, and Pa took down a big ham and a side of bacon. He handed them to me and told me to put them in the sled and wait. When he returned, he was carrying a sack of flour over his right shoulder and a smaller sack of something in his left hand. "What's in the little sack?" I asked. "Shoes. They're out of shoes. Little Jakey just had gunny sacks wrapped around his feet when he was out in the wood pile this morning. I got the children a little candy, too. Just wouldn't be Christmas without a little candy." We rode the 2 miles to Widow Jensen's pretty much in silence. I tried to think through what Pa was doing. We didn't have much by worldly standards. Of course, we did have a big wood pile, though most of it was left now. Most of it, what was left now, was still in the form of logs that I would have to saw into blocks and split before we could use it. We also had meat and flour, so we could spare that, but I knew we didn't have any money, so why was Pa buying them shoes and candy? Really, why was he doing any of this? Widow Jensen had closer neighbors than us. It shouldn't have been our concern. We came in from the blind side of Jensen's house and unloaded the wood as quietly as possible. Then we took the meat and flour and shoes to the door. We knocked. The door opened a crack, and a timid voice said, Who is it? Lucas Miles, ma'am, and my son Matt. Can we come in for a bit? Widow Jensen opened the door and let us in. She had a blanket wrapped around her shoulders. The children were wrapped in another and were sitting in front of the fireplace by a very small fire that hardly gave off any heat at all. Widow Jensen fumbled with the match and finally lit the lamp. We brought you a few things, ma'am, Pa said and set down the sack of flour. I put the meat on the table. Then Pa handed her the sack that had the shoes in it. She opened it hesitantly and took the shoes out one pair at a time. There was a pair for her and one for each of the children. Sturdy shoes, the best. Shoes that would last. I watched her carefully. She bit her lower lip to keep it from trembling. And then tears filled her in her eyes and started running down her cheeks. She looked up at Pa like she wanted to say something, but it wouldn't come out. We brought a load of wood too, ma'am, Pa said. Then he turned to me and said, Matt, go bring in enough to last for a while. Let's get that fire up to size and heat this place up. I wasn't the same person when I went back out to bring in the wood. I had a big lump in my throat, and much as I hate to admit it, there were tears in my eyes too. In my mind, I kept seeing those three kids huddled around that fireplace and their mother standing there with tears running down her cheeks and so much gratitude in her heart that she couldn't speak. My heart swelled within me and a joy filled my soul that I've never known before. I had given at Christmas many times before, but never when it made so much difference. I could see we were literally saving the lives of these people. I soon had the fire blazing and everyone's spirits soared. The kids started to giggle when Pa handed them each a piece of candy, and Widow Jensen looked on with a smile that probably hadn't crossed her face for a long time. She finally turned to us. God bless you, she said. I know the Lord himself has sent you the children. I have been praying that he would send one of his angels to spare us. In spite of myself, the lump returned to my throat and the tears welled up in my eyes again. I'd never thought of Pa in those exact terms before. But after Widow Jensen mentioned it, I could see that it was probably true. I was sure. I was sure that a better man than Pa had never walked the earth. I started remembering all the times he had gone out of his way for Ma and me, and many others. The list seemed endless as I thought on it. Pa insisted that everyone try on the shoes before we left. I was amazed when they all fit, and I wondered how he had known the sizes to get. Then I guessed if he was on an errand for the Lord, that the Lord would make sure he got the right sizes. Tears were running down Widow Jensen's face again, and we stood up to leave. Pa took each of the kids in his big arms and gave them a hug. They clung to him and didn't want us to go. I could see that they missed their Pa. And I was glad that I still had mine. At the door, Pa turned to Widow Jensen and said, "The missus wanted me to invite you and the children over for Christmas dinner tomorrow. The turkey will be more than the three of us can eat, and a man can get cantankerous if he had to eat turkey for too many meals. We'll be by to get you about 11. It'll be nice to have some little ones around again. Matt here hasn't been little for quite a spell." I was the youngest. My two older brothers and two older sisters were all married and had moved away. Widow Jensen nodded and said, "Thank you, Brother Miles. I don't have to say, may the Lord bless you. I know for certain that he will." Out on the sled, I felt the warmth that came from deep within and I didn't even notice the cold. When we had gone a ways, Pa turned to me and said, "Matt, I want you to know something. Your Ma and me have been tucking away a little money here and there all year so we could buy that rifle for you. But we didn't quite have enough. Yesterday, a man who owed me a little money from years back came by to make things square. Your Ma and me were real excited, thinking now we could get you that rifle. And I started into town this morning just to do that. But on the way, I saw little Jakey out scratching in the woodpile with his feet wrapped in those gunny sacks. And I knew what I had to do. So, son, I spent the money for shoes and candy for those children, and I hope you understand." I understood, and my eyes became wet with tears again. I understood very well, and I was so glad Pa had done it. Just then, the rifle seemed very low on my list of priorities. Pa had given me a lot more. He had given me the look on Widow Jensen's face and the radiant smiles of her three children. For the rest of my life, whenever I saw any of the Jensens or split a block of wood, I remembered. And remembering brought back that same joy I felt riding home beside Pa that night. Pa had given me much more than a rifle that night. He had given me the best Christmas of my life. So that was one of the more challenging things I've done in a while. It's funny, this morning I was walking Zen, Sunday morning, and I thought, I was thinking about recording the podcast, and I thought, when am I going to run out of things to read? And I'm like, I hope I haven't read anything more than once, and I'm like, I'm pretty good at that, like remembering. I know I'm very repetitive with the things I say, but when I read something I wrote in my collection that I've had forever, I'm always trying to make sure, I'm pretty sure I read that one, or but I always, at some point I'll run out. So I started reading this one, and the first, A Christmas Story, the first word is Pa, P-A-W, and I went, Pa, and I went, okay, I'm like, oh, so this is... I was like, I should read it with a southern accent. And I was probably almost halfway through, and I was like, what is the... I was like, why do I have this? Like, why would I read this? And then, bam, I got hit, and I was a mess. The first time, I could barely read through it. I'm like, wipe my eyes, read a sentence, wipe my eyes, read a sentence. And I was like it, out of nowhere. And I was like, it was just written, I thought, in a way where you could just change. Like it was me sitting there complaining about something stupid. And then you see someone and they have so much less than you and you're going, what was I doing? I feel horrible for thinking that, for feeling that. And then when you've ever given someone something that really needs it, whatever it is, it could be a hug, a compliment, change, it could be whatever, good news. And when you see that person's face light up and they're just aura change, it automatically affects you when you just get this it's like energy created. So it obviously tapped into that for me, because I was like, I can't, this is so, 1881, when was this written? I'm like, I couldn't even, like, where I found, no author, nothing. No idea where I got that, but I'm like, okay, well, when I got to the end and I was bawling, I'm like, okay, well, now I know why I kept it and put it in one of my book of collections. And then when I'm like, okay, just try to get through it without crying, and then as soon as I got done, I was like, okay, stop, and I'm telling you right now, I just took a break just to clear my mind, wipe my eyes, blow my nose. That, wow. And again, not really sure when this episode will come out, but such a great thing. You know, if you are just so thought, just so stuck in your thoughts, stuck in your head about your stuff, go to an AA meeting. Go to a Boys and Girls Club, YMCA. Go to a homeless shelter. You know what I mean? Just go anywhere else where there's people that have it way worse than you. Or just go help anyone. It could be your neighbor. It could be a family member or the needy. That's how you get out of your head. You can't just sit in a dark room by yourself in a corner, huddled with a blanket and a pillow, going, okay, I'm going to wait here until I'm not thinking bad thoughts. It's like you just created the perfect petri dish for that thing to grow and blossom and for you to be stuck and locked in that cave of hell forever. So found art, what is it? Why now? 270-some episodes, and now you're going to do an episode about your art. And a bunch of people just stopped listening. Well, it hit me that, doing it for, almost 4 years now, and I've never done one about my art. And I don't know what, it was just this creative week. I don't know what was different going on, but I did some balances on, it was like the 8th, 9th of December, and then the 10th, 11th, I started making this driftwood thing, and I was like, automatically, it's like, boom, fruits of my labor. You know, the fountain's better. What comes out of the fountain's better. I've been doing this thing for a long time. Of course, it's going to get better. And I'm like, yeah, I get that, but this is the level I was at. And it made me just kind of stop and pause. Because I'm sitting, inside the Zen Garden, my apartment, and I'm making stuff and I'm creating stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm just, there's my dog. Here I am. It's, Thursday afternoon. And I'm just making stuff on my workbench. Fountain flowing. Pandora in the background, windows open, doors open, breeze blowing through. And I was like, this is just cool that I'm in here making this. Like, that's, you send a little 30-second video back when I'm 10 years old. And this is you. You're 53. It's Thursday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, okay, wait, what am I doing? I'm not working. I'm making that. That's my dog. I live there. What? Like, it was just a cool moment. Again, I'm not really having that many days. They're all blending together, but I'm just having cool moments, and I'm trying to be aware, mindful, and thankful for those moments. And that's when it hit me. It was right that Tuesday or Wednesday. I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to record a podcast about my art. So found art, the name comes from, this is a funny story how things stick. And I've gone through two of these. I had a camera that shot panoramic photos, film. And they'd come out, you get them developed, and they're 4 inch by 12. And, I didn't really use it that much, but I was in California, and I was going to the beach, and I remember seeing this really oval, like elongated oval stone. It was like perfectly smooth and shaped. And I'm like someone made it. But there it was laying on the beach. And I remember standing it up, which, on the sand, it's not that hard to do. And all of a sudden it cast this long shadow. And I turned my camera vertical. And I'm like, well, I can get that whole shadow, that rock standing up, the rest of the sand, the beach, the water, the waves, the sky, the sun. And I was, oh. And it was just, obviously, some 12 years later, I'm talking about it. I remember it was just a real poignant moment. So I started just taking those pictures and putzing around and playing. And then I saw Rivers and Tides, which is a documentary film on this artist in Scotland named Andy Goldsworthy. So rivers and tides changed my life. This dude just go out in the woods with nothing and make stuff with his hands, like insane. But he did some stonework and stuff. So I was just walking along the beach, and I would, you know, get a 5 stones, one bigger to smaller, and I'd put them in a row and take a picture of it. I'd walk another place and stand something up and do something and take a picture of it. I remember I walked, and I went, okay, I'm out of film. So I started turning around and walking back, and this dude walks up and he goes, hey, are you the artist? And I remember getting all like nervous, like, you know, like I'm out bragging, I'm an artist. And someone walked up and said, you're not an artist. I'm like, yeah, like I got caught trying to pretend I was being an artist. But I remember it just threw me. And I was like, he goes, yeah, I called it found art. I was just walking along and I found it. And that is the entire conversation that I remember. Him making me feel uncomfortable because he asked if I was the artist, and then he named it found art. And don't remember anything else about him, because I was just, you know, stunned and surprised and, you know, kind of walked away. I'm like, all right, whatever, bye. I'm out of film, I'm leaving. And there was found art. But it kind of became this thing where I would say, you know, I go to a beach and I find the stones. I bounce them, I rearrange them, decorate the beach, and then I leave them for others to find. So to me, I was just this piece. You know, it wasn't like all of a sudden I brought some big red and yellow and purple thing to the beach that didn't blend in, wasn't there before, stuck out, was neon. I just took things that were there and rearranged them. But what was so dynamic, I mean, I love photographing it and doing that whole, oh, I can get the whole thing, but everything would change, you know, as the sun would set, the shadow would change, the tide would rise, you know, the tide would smooth the sand or cover the piece, or it would change it. And it was just, like I said, it just kept kind of evolving. As I took pictures and did things, it just kind of kept growing. And at one point, I was now with my second ex, and she said, well, you know, why don't you hang one of your pictures? And I was like, what? Like, buy a frame and put one of my pictures, like, you know, in our home? I got, it's a kind of a compliment. And that's about the time I saw another cat named Michael Grab, and his website is called Gravity Glue. And this dude was a freak of nature with balance. Like, I was like, what? Like, I was doing a 2-3 on a skill level out of 10, and all of a sudden I saw this guy, and it was like 10 out of 10, 11, not even possible. So I never was like, okay, well, what I'm going to try to do, it was like, okay, that guy is just over there doing that thing, I'm gonna do this. So I liked having like 3 really, really round stones, and, you know, like bigger to smaller, and then where it was put on the sand. It just made a really framed, elegant, beautiful, simple, minimalistic that had some sort of balance with it. And once in a while, I would be a little bit more difficult of a balance and, you know, whatever, but I was never aspiring to do that. I was like, not interested. And it's like a whole kind of defensive thing where you're kind of blown away and you can't even understand how someone does it. Like, yeah, I wouldn't want to do that anyways. He's just into that. You know, that whole thing. But I loved doing it. And that was the thing right around then. I mean, it was funny how I would always have enough room or ability or access to somewhere where I could cut some wood, sand a little bit, make a frame. So now the whole found art thing, well, now, you know, finding stones, rearranging them, taking pictures, developing the film, making photographs, and I'm finding wood, typically at the beach, and coming home and making frames from that wood. So found wood, found art, recycled wood. It was just like this earthy, cool, like I really found a thing. And then, you know, again, I was making bigger frames and I was, you know, making bigger pictures. And then I decided to do an art show. And I can't even remember. I think it was just around like a client party. And I had made a table out of driftwood, and I set up our apartment. Our apartment on Doheny in Beverly Hills was like a big lofty thing. It was at an upper level above the kitchen that was open, exposed, and vaulted ceiling. And it was pretty dope. You know, the big room was big and cool. So you got a bunch of party, and I had all stuff displayed and pictures, and I had started making videos. I'm like, what Andy Goldsworthy does, Rivers and Tides. So I started, you know, whatever I did on the beach, I'd just, you know, lay down a row of big stones, whatever, and I'd record it, and I'd come home, and I'd edit it, and, you know, I had the little cassette tapes, and I was collecting the cassette tapes, and had them all labeled and organized, and so I would have like a party for clients. They'd come over, I'd had art set up, and I'd show them the videos, and you know, it was just as crazy. And I look back on it now, and I was like, oh my god, it's like, you know, three rocks laid down in a row, and this video is horrible to what I'm doing now. But it was just kind of because I was so into it, you know, and there was no making money, there was no internet, there was no anything. It was just, I loved doing it. So there's this point where El Pescador is a beach in Malibu. And it was just full of stones, and not a lot of people went. So there was this thing where every Wednesday I would go to El Pescador. It was just what I did. Every Wednesday. It was funny because I had gotten a book about Ansel Adams, and he went to Yosemite every day to take pictures. You'd be thinking, well, doesn't it get old, or doesn't it get boring? It's like, it changed every day. And I'm like, exactly. Every time I was at the beach, I went to go to the same beach, and it always changed. Different tide, you know, sometimes there'd be no stones, more sand, less sand, you know, angle on the beach, no angle at the beach, you know, really, really low tide. You could walk forever up and down the coast, really, really high tide. It just kept changing. So the background would always change. And it was just such a cool thing. And I think, you know, when you do, you know, go back to repetition, there I am, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old going to a building with a wall and a blue line and hitting a tennis ball. No iPod, no music, just repetition. So now fast forward, here I am going to the beach, taking pictures. And I've never been good at photography. I point and shoot. It's simply a thing that I frame with. I come home and I do everything else on Photoshop. I've always been that way. Had a bunch of different cameras and, you know some things, but literally just point shoot. It's about, you know, my angle, my framing, what I'm taking a picture of. That was always art to me. Not, oh, the balance is amazing. Oh, he's such a great camera operator. None of that was applicable to me. And then a friend, I think, said, hey, I'm having a party. Will you bring some of your art and we'll raffle it off? And I was like, yeah, that'd be totally cool. So like little bitty moments that kept kind of happening. And at this point, I think I had, you know, 5 or 6 big pictures in the apartment, and my bathroom was full of a bunch of little ones because I had made a ton of little frames, and now I was just making stuff, banging it out. And I was hooked up with a dude who had a wood shop, and he's like, you train me, you can come to the wood shop. And that went on for quite a while. And while I was there, it was one of the coolest things that ever happened. But the Prim resort and casino on the state line of Vegas and California, Nevada and California, that hotel casino, I was there with a friend, and we were walking out the owner because they had done a remodeling. They took us down to the new spa. They had redone the men's and women's spa, and it was done, you know, really nice. Like I think they went through a big hotel like the Wynn, and they said, okay, let's make it like this, but do it kind of IKEA-ish. So it was, you know, cool, but it was nice, but it had that kind of flair to it. Very zen, very whatever. And as we're walking through, there's three of us. The owner, the manager goes, we just need things for the walls. And my friend turns and goes, well, do you know what Tom does? And it was this ding, 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 ding. So fast forward, I made 40 frames and printed 40 of my photos and put them in the male or men's and the women's spa. Went in there one day and a bunch of tools and all the things and hung. And it was a big job. I mean, to make that many frames all the same and stain them and get them ready and put glass in and get the pictures, develop, you know, print the pictures, cut the pictures, put, and working with glass and frames and putting the picture was one of the things I hated the most. Because the glass you could cut, the glass would break. It was just a thing I didn't like doing. So having 40 things that I had to put together that were fragile and potentially dangerous, and then I had to ship, you know, drive them all the way to Vegas, and then I had to, you know, put them all together and hang them, and it was like a lot of pressure. But I mean, I look back going, that's one of the cooler things that I did. And then after that, the next kind of thing I got into was my ex had kind of grown up in the city of Orange, and there's an Orange County Street Fair. Not the Orange County Fair. That's a huge, big, big, big thing. This is in the small little town of Orange, California. And there's a little round circle drive in the center of town, a street going each way, and they close that whole area. And it's, you know, music and food festival and that whole thing. And I got a booth there for, I think, 3 years in a row. And again, very cool, but it was just, I had to pack my stuff. I had to ship my stuff. I had to set up everything. And it was, you know, people would go there with a few boxes and set up their jewelry and then leave. And I had, like, you know, frames and easels and candle holders and all this wood and glass. And it was just, you know, it was always two carloads. And I'd be like, oh, cool, money. And then I get then going, I'm never going to do that again. So it was one thing is I love to pump out the pictures, the balances, I'll make all of it. I just don't like selling it. Like, I like talking to the people. You know, I'd be there Friday night to Sunday night about my art. Like, that was cool to me. Like, I enjoyed meeting people and them coming in. And, you know, a lot of them were super, super friendly and, you know, complimentary. And so that was the cool part. But going, I'm sitting in this one spot all day and then I got to come back. And I just didn't even have the mindset. I'm like, I know I'd leave and my ex would take over just so I could walk away for like half an hour and just get out of that. Cause you know, it's loud and there's music and there's people. So it's like, you know, you're sitting in the middle of a fair and yeah, you know, now I'm at the beach all alone. So you can see how that went. And there was, you know, a little blips along the way of things that potentially were going to happen and sales or something like that. And it would then, you know, part of me was doing things and I was going to get on Etsy and just, and it was always this boarding of, you know, I've always loved making the stuff, hated selling the stuff. And I've always gotten by okay financially without selling my art. I just like it when I go do it. And then I share it with the world. And like that, you know, Zen Garden gets pretty full and I'll like make something cool. I'm like, okay, I got to get rid of that piece and I'll give something I made to like a client or something. You know, so it's, I'm not really trying to sell a whole lot. Although that being said, I've been thinking about actually doing some things. And it was like Christmas time. I'm like, well, I should just, you know, put 3 or 4 items up on my Facebook page, found art thing, and say, hey, these items are for sale. You know, might be kind of cool, unique, one of a kind Christmas gifts. And, you know, why would that hurt? You know, but it's one of those things where it's like, well, you're pumping it and you're this and that and you're always trying to sell. And I just don't want to be that person. So I'm always trying to walk that fine line of not being that person. So this was last year. And I remember it was like the vibe was changing, the tribe was changing, people were leaving my life for, you know, the right reasons. And it was getting quiet and I could tell, and this is the weirdest thing, but I'm like, my balance is better at the beach. Like, there was a shift. And again, you'd be like, well, if you do it for 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, of course you can get better. It's like, yeah, I get that. But the timing of out with the bad and in with more of the good, and then this level of, oof. I remember one day going, I'm going to put this really big rock kind of on a point on this little bitty rock. And I walked away, got my camera, walked back, took a picture. And like 2 hours later, it was there. And I remember it was that staircase. And I'm like, I did that. That's that really hard thing to do. And then it's like you do this counterbalancing. And there's just a bunch of different things that you can do to make it harder and harder and harder. And I used to go out, and it was just in my, because I loved, I mean, my house is full of, you know, stones, and they're round and perfect and smooth, and that's what I was attracted to. So I go, those are the stones I find. Well, you can only balance so many of those up, and then typically it's bigger to smaller, smaller, and you're like, okay, like the pyramid thing, and then you're kind of done. So now I walk out to the beach, I go, I'm going to find the craziest looking rock with a point on it, you know, a triangle or a star looking or a big V or something that if I put it on that point, balanced it, it's going to look so cool. And I'm like, I mean, that's how I think. And each time I go out, I'm like, I'm going to make it a little harder. I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to try to add it. Like I'm trying to challenge myself because I feel good. Like, I didn't need any more problems back when I saw Michael Grab doing those crazy bands. I don't need any more pressure in my life. It was kind of, I don't need that. I mean, it's exactly how I feel. And now I'm going, man, I'm good. I'm ready for a challenge. Let me go out there. You know, because you sit there in one position balancing rocks and your shoulders and your neck. And, you know, it gets like you're meditating, but it's physically challenging. And then sometimes they get big stones and they're super heavy and they fall 10, 15 times in a row and I don't give up and you get done, you go, oh, and it was like the best one and it worked out and it sits there for hours and then I start putzing with the sand and I'm like, I'm that guy. You know, people walk by and they stop. They take pictures. They go, how did you do that? Most common asked question, how do you do that? Number one answer, patience and perseverance. And then I go, you know, I've also been doing it a long time. And then this last year I've been saying, and I'm in a good place in my life. I cannot not deny that. I'm in the best place in my life and what's coming out of me is the best. I mean, that's that thing. It's like if I got this, you know, bucket of gold, and I'm like, wow, every time I go to that bucket of gold, I go there and I get this gold. And, you know, gold can be, you know, symbolic for anything. Why am I not going to tell people? This is where my good came from. This is where I get my good. This is why I feel good. This is what I focus on. This is what, you know, I heal being thankful and mindful. What am I going to tell people? Be thankful and mindful. You know, I'm not trying to fix it if it's not broke. So all my choices, all my mistakes, all my time and energy placed into the areas that I placed it got me to this point where I'm like, wow, I feel good. And then, you know, just, you know, went through some stuff in December. You know, it was not the easiest week. And I wasn't really thrown. And it was the week after that where the creativity kind of peaked because I made this driftwood thing. It used to be just a cool piece of driftwood that I'd stand vertically and attach to a piece of wood. Sand it, stain it, but that was it. Then I started saying, well, I can kind of cut the tops level and make like candle holders. And then I got this one piece. I'm like, well, I could turn it like that and stand it on this one piece. And I just started kind of making it artistic. And then I just went nuts with a few pieces, like really detailed, really specific, really, you know, doing dowels and stuff. And all of a sudden I started this. And I've had, this is the craziest thing. This is a peek into my head. So beware. Make sure you're sitting down. I'll have a piece of driftwood for a year. I will just, there it is, it's in my head, it's in my house, I see it, I see it, I see it. I won't do anything until I see it. Oh, I could do that. Or I'll find a piece and right away come home, cut it, and I go, I know exactly what I'm doing with it. This piece I've had laying around, I'm like, I don't know, I should put some dowels in it. I should put some dowels in it. So I'm getting kind of cleaned up and organized, and I get about ready to work on this piece, and you know, they kind of sit in my house and I pull a piece out and I'll add to it or do something new to it or go, well, I'll just start a new one. And I'm like, okay, so I grabbed it and I went, what if I just put the dowels through? You know, cut like a 5-inch dowel and just, you know, the top twig that kind of goes, it's like kind of like a Y. There's the bottom piece and it kind of goes up like a Y. And so through the one little branch, just drill a hole, stick a dowel, and make them go from like 5 to 4 to 3 to 2 to 1 all the way up. So it almost look like a leaf or something, or, you know, a branch with leaves on it. They're wooden or whatever. And I'd never done that. And I'd done, you know, some dowel stuff with some driftwood stuff. But all of a sudden I was doing this and I got done. And I'm like, well, what if I went the other way? And I went the opposite way. And I'm like, what if I added wire? What if I added push pins? What if I added... And I was just... And now I've been working on it for 2 months. And I'll normally work on a piece of driftwood for 2-3 days. You know, because I come home, cut it, sand it, boom, put it up, sand stain a few times. So within a week, 3 days, it's typically done, depending upon, you know, how much work I put into it or how big it is. But this is like 2 months. And I got these time-lapse videos, because it's so time-consuming. And this is when I got done going, I did that balance. I came home and put them on my computer, and I was looking at them, and I'm like, wow. Like, that's pretty, like, kind of just stepping back and going, you know, that's a product of me. That comes out of me. Like, my fountain's good. And then I turn 180 degrees and look at the workbench, and I'm like, you know, it's not done yet. I'm probably a 2/3 of the way done. And I don't know if it's going to be done. I'm like, look at that thing. I'm like, and it's just being created. Like, I didn't even know where a lot of these things go. I don't measure. I don't do any of that stuff, really. I don't plan. I don't draw anything out. Kind of just, I get a vision or I start and I go, well, I'm going to do that to it. Okay. Well, let me cut that. Okay. All right. Well, I like that. Let me stand it. Let me attach it. All right, well, it's good, it's cool. I'm just going to sand and stain it. I want to, you know, stain it until I like it. I might do it 4, 5, 6, 7 times in a row. And then I'll know when it's kind of like, it's done. And then I've had pieces sitting around that are like that and me going, hey, I'm going to add some metal to that. Or I'm going to add that or take that off. You know, so it's always, you know, a piece in my Zen garden doesn't mean it's done. It could always change. So like the creative process and not judging, not critiquing, allowing it to come out, but being so aware how thankful I am that I get to, and how aware I am. I mean, my quote I've been kind of sharing, I'm the best I've ever been, I have less of everything. And I'm like, but look what's coming out of me. Look at the product. I mean, I was never, ever going to try to find a rock with a point and try to balance it. I don't have that kind of time, and I don't have that kind of desire. Now that's all I do. I look around at my, you know, again, I call it, you know, the found art, but the driftwood rising stuff, I'm like, it's just, I really I really like my stuff. And it sounds like, oh, you know, this episode, Tom pats himself on the back the whole time. It is not. And if you've been listening for the past 4 years, you know my path. You know what I've been through. I didn't give up. I did not quit. I am here, best I've ever been, telling you how much I love my art. I don't think that's me bragging. I don't think that means I'm being conceited or narcissistic. I'm just telling you what's happening in my life. Again, love AA. Looking back on it, wasn't fun in my life at that time and going there. But like, the one thing you can share is your experience. No one gets an opinion. You can listen or not listen. So that's all I'm doing. You know, listen to episode or just pick one. 45, 96, 114. Listen to what I'm talking about. Go to Tom's story, where I tell you about my 2 divorces and my father. You know, I talked about all that stuff. Why? So people know they're not alone. And people who do not have a huge brain and whatever can get through stuff. Make it through stuff just by not giving up and then starting to realize that you can control the stuff in your head. You can control your choices. You can control your thoughts. You can control your words. You can control who you hang out with. You control who occupies your time and space. And you can do that which you want to in your life. Go where you want to. Go to the beach. Balance stones when you're 50. For no money. Because you like it. And not care. See, that again, come to my well that by the water I'm selling. That's what I'm selling. Like, I'm pretty stoked about my art and what's coming out of me. I should tell people. Why? Because I've told them everything else. You know, they know I'm alone with my best friend the majority of the time. They know I have less of everything. They know the rough road I've been through. My father, my family. Shouldn't I tell them about this stuff? Of course I'm going to. Of course I'm going to. So what I'm going to end with is more about me. More about me. I received a testimonial, and I stumbled upon a testimonial. And then someone sent me a testimonial that I asked for 7 years ago, all within a few days of each other. So here we go. We're going to start with my current client, one of my favorites, Mr. Morrison. My name is Chris Morrison, and I'm a 51-year-old musician from Connecticut. My wife first told me about Tom Dieter's Pro You podcast in the spring of 2018. After listening and enjoying quite a few of his podcast episodes, my wife mentioned to me that Tom also does online training. I had no interest in joining a gym, and I had to admit that I thought he sounded like a good guy, so my wife reached out to Tom on my behalf and set up our first appointment via Skype. That was 6 months ago. Tom and I meet online every week, and I always look forward to our sessions. Tom has no gimmicks. Tom guides clients on a mental and physical path that he has already walked. Tom's methods are simple and clear, and if you are consistent, you will get results. At 51 years of age, I am better mentally and physically than I can remember. Thank you, Tom. Well, thank you, Chris. So what I liked about that was, here's a dude, you know, musician, married, kids, you know, pretty much here it is, did it, done, right? Made it. And going, I'm looking at myself and I think there's different. I think there's better. Like, can I make better choices? And then he's looking for answers. So he listens to a podcast. He's thinking, well, maybe I could get help. Maybe that guy could show me the way. Calls, reaches out. So that's what I'm saying. You know, he keeps reaching, you know, getting help. That's what I liked. I didn't quit. You know, pastors, therapists, psychiatrists, medication, AA. I kept asking for help. Ask, seek, and ye shall find. You know, so that's what I dug about him out the gate. That he just did all this stuff, and at 51, he's like, I'm changing. I'm like, I love that. Isn't that dope? Who's thinking I'm going to wait to 51 to change? Or they're thinking in their 20s or 30s, you're it. I mean, I've seen people from high school that don't look like they've changed. And I love it when people deem themselves worthy. So thank you for being you, Mr. Morrison. This is from Gypsy, who 7 years later said, I never sent you this. Here you go. And she's just a really, really dope dancer chick that's just, she just is a very, very free floating spirit that navigates through this world. And I'm not even sure where she's living, but she's out of the country all the time. I think she lives out of the country. But she wrote, how can I describe Tom Dieter's in words that gives the depth and sweet power in his soul? Working with Tom was a joyful journey, and I have found his communication and knowledge to be profound, as well as he bridges our connection to the importance of nature and how loving the earth is, direct love of self and each other. Thank you, Tom. Teachers open the door, but you must enter by yourself. Gypsy. Yeah, she's a yoga instructor and all that stuff. She's dope. So thank you for that. Very much appreciated. Now this last one, I, you know, again, I have a file with the stuff, and I look through it, and all of a sudden I see this, and I'm like, wow. So I'm going to read that. Tom Dieters is an incredible trainer. That's what got my attention. LOL. He doesn't just take you through some pre-cooked program he's selling. He trains you, the you between your ears. Anyone who has battled with problems with their fitness knows how difficult it is. Often, you follow whatever program for a few weeks, you eventually fall off it, and you just end up back where you started, or worse. Tom changes that because the thing that seldom gets dealt with is the very thing that is making your life miserable and sabotaging your efforts to move forward. That nasty little bully voice inside of you. Tom is relentless in battling that evil self-talk and helping you move past all the negative thinking that is holding you back and replacing it with gratitude and pro-you thinking. I started listening to the podcast from the beginning. I slowly got the notion that this was something I needed. I wrote an email and in it set my drafts for months until I got the courage to actually send it. I'm so grateful I did. My life is moving forward in more ways than just improved health. He has been able to inspire consistency, the key to any long-term changes. He makes it easy and seemingly effortless as you make small, significant improvements to the way you think and the way you go about treating yourself. I am impressed and amazed at Tom's generosity of spirit. This isn't a business for him, it is a calling, and it shows in every interaction with him. I am forever grateful for having Tom in my life. So this is the last one I'm going to read. And this one was very special. And I'm not sure exactly why it hit so deep. But partly it was just unexpected, unanticipated. I posted some architecture drawings that I had done in high school, photos of them on Instagram. And Emily McDowell Gibson replied, so I'm thinking, you know, typically it's something nice, like, hey, those are nice drawings, or, wow, you're old, that was a long time ago in high school, or something. And she writes, I've got news for you, good sir. You are an architect. You design, create, balance, build, support, and protect on a daily basis, whether it be through found art, martial arts, performance art, dancing, writing, sharing, tending your garden and your friendships, spending quality time with Zen, your PT clients, your life coach clients, or your podcast listeners. Every single day, you build and contribute and inspire. You're a force for good and a fixture in the lives of people you both know and have never met. The mark you're leaving on this world is far more tangible or substantial than any building or bridge you could ever design. Well done, you. You do so much for so many, Tom. I hope people tell you regularly how much your generosity means to them. I thanked Emily a bunch, and I've never met or spoken to Emily. And when I started reading, I immediately started crying. I went right to my heart. And I was just wiping my eyes, just bubbling, trying to get through it. And I actually had a client. And then after the client, I reread it and cried again. And that's when I responded to her. I told her that it made me cry. And it's the weirdest thing. I'm not always sure. Like, well, what was the deal with that? Why was that such a... And to me, there is such a power. Like, there's quotes, you know, all the time. You never know what one kind word will do to someone. You never know what someone else is going through. And that's why I'm always trying to share, because people are like, wow, I feel so much better. You did, you know. And you know, people along the way with podcasts. Like, you know, they never really comment, or they never really reach out, or they never really do something. And once in a while, they just get this impulse, like, I just need to. He needs to know this. And I've done that before. Like, I'm like, I just need to tell this person this. And Emily's message, it was so profound. It was just like this punch. You know, like hit in the head going, here's how people see you. Not how your father made you feel. I think that's the root. You know, because like you just live. I mean, it's kind of pretty much 48 years I felt one way about myself. And I'm pretty sure I know why I felt that way. So when you get a message from a stranger that knows you really well, because you've shared so much for so many years, and in one moment, I mean, I don't even know how long that took to write, but I cried, I responded, I copied it, I brought it to my desktop so I could read it on a podcast, because that's how much I wanted Emily to know what affected me. I wanted other people to know how much that affected me. Like, you know, it's like this little, like, just a little degree to the right, there was a shift in your life on that day you read that thing from that person you never met. Very powerful. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Emily. Now, I'll tell you straight out, reading those things make me feel good. I'm not going to lie. And I didn't read it so I could feel good in front of you. Again, this is what I'm talking about. Go back to episode 1 or whatever. Listen to my story. I'm 53 and a half. I didn't quit. I did not give up. Nor did I excel fabulously with brilliant, spectacular, huge moves forward quickly. None of that happened. But at 53 and a half, I can go, I'm going to do a podcast about how dope my art feels and some of the things people are saying about me. Like, I can share that now. Because if I'm in the end zone, and I worked really, really hard going those 100 yards. And I told people about each play, each first down, each run, each pass, each fumble, each interception. I'm definitely going to tell you about being in the end zone. Because, see, that's what I think. I think everybody has to deem themselves worthy for real and go, look, there's a better thing out there. There's a better feeling. There's a better me. And that's the start. And then it's just one day, one moment at a time. Let's see, like it's 51, dude's getting excited. 53 and a half, I'm like, dude, look at this stuff. Nothing to do with money. Nothing to do with likes, followers, how big your house is, what you do for a job. Just, are you peaceful between the ears? Are you the best fountain you can be? Therefore, having what comes out of that fountain, something that you're actually like happy with. Like I did something to that driftwood thing, and I remember I walked in the kitchen, I kind of clapped and I smiled and I put my arms up, and I'm like, that just happened naturally. Like I go, I made that. I turned, I clapped, my hands went up, and I smiled. Out. You know, it's not for money. It's not, you know. Like that just feels good to be operating there. In lieu of what I don't have. Come to my well, by the water I sell, because you are worth it. Thank you. to your Pro You moment. I love them. I love them, love them, love them. Glad you're here. Hope you're loving them as well. So let's begin to control that, which we can. Seated, legs crossed if we can. Eyes closed, neutral neck. Navel tucked into the spine, shoulders over the hips. We're going to draw that inhale through the nose, exhale out the mouth. We're going to get good at that, efficient at that, proficient at that. And then we're going to slow it down as we focus on that breath, elongate it, so we can really experience it, direct it. And thus connecting the mind and body and making us present in this Pro-You moment. So see, it's all about you. You thinking about your body, your breath, your posture, what you can control in this moment. It just makes your world really small. And you just keep it that way to the best of your ability for 180 seconds. I'll let you know when time is up. Do not judge, do not critique. Love yourself. You may begin now. Another successful Pro-You moment. Little things done consistently is such a key. Taking time to pause and reflect on the things in life that we've gone through, that we're going through, that we're feeling, is not the easiest nor the most comfortable thing, but it can be the most rewarding. think anyone ever told me this. I don't think it was ever taught in any class. But it's so important to stop everything that's going on. Ask yourself why you're thinking what you're thinking, why you're feeling what you're feeling, why you're chasing what you're chasing. It wasn't until I was 50 that I began to build a new me. But with that new vibe, I built a new tribe. And it has remained very small. But it's sustainable. It's controllable. It fulfills me. It supports me. And I know I'm better than I've ever been. Yet I'm highly aware that my trials are not over. So I want to stay present, like we are in these pro-you moments, just thankful about this moment right here. I can inhale, exhale. I can slow it down. I can stay connected to my body and not think about anything else. And then I can open my eyes, hug my best friend, Zen, and just be thankful for all that I have right here, right now. Peace, and God bless.